Welcome, everyone, to the CineFect Podcast, the podcast where me and some other douchebags talk about film, television, video games, and all the things we're completely obsessed with. My name is Chris.
Whoa, I'm Alex.
What? Whoa, what's going on?
I don't know.
Oh, is this a jump in the space-time continuum?
I guess it's me trying to take a joke.
Oh.
Trying to make a joke. Didn't turn out too well.
Wow.
There wasn't really a joke there. No, we should keep going.
Oh, yeah. Let's keep the awkwardness, because this is real shit. Unedited, raw, uncensored. That's how we bring you this shit. No limits.
Late night on Skinamax, of course.
Late night on Skinamax. There we go. We've got quite the show. Looper came out, and we're going to talk about that. That will be a really interesting conversation. And also, some interesting stuff like happened with some games and some certain things that happened that I've personally gotten, which like I'll give away later. But first things first, how have you been doing, Alex? You dirty man.
I've been fine. I have been just dandy. Still going the daily routine, attending classes, coming back home with like plenty of time in my afternoon because I have all my classes set up, so I get out of school at like noon, which is different than high school. Usually playing games or going to see movies or taking naps or studying, what have you. It's still pretty much same old right now, but some would say it's like living life.
It's like living life. That's
what have you been up to, Chris? Please.
Well, pretty much that same thing, except I've also been like writing a bunch of stuff, and also
Except you also haven't really been playing games.
I haven't really, because the thing is, I'm at a dorm, so I'm away from my 360 and PS3. Speaking of which, that segues into a very interesting thing.
Ah, perfect.
A buddy of mine, who's on the Omega Twilight Infinity forums, he decided to mail me his old PlayStation 3 model for completely free, as well as pack in like 5 other games, which was really, really nice of him. Everyone, give a big mighty thank you to the guy known as Snake, also known as Lorcan McCormick. And you know how we previously thought that Lorcan McCormick might be a fake name? We were kind of curious about that. It turns out that's totally his real name. Like, it was on the box and everything.
Well, we'll give a little clap to him, you know? Give him some respect, you know?
Yeah.
Job well done, you finally got a PS3.
Because I've been wanting one for a while, because I've been wanting to play the Uncharteds, the Infamouses. I really wanted to get Last Guardian back when that was still going to be a thing. Sadly, I still have hope that it will happen. I absolutely adore. Speaking of which, my PS3 came with Ico and Shadow of the Colossus HD collection, which is fucking rad because Shadow of the Colossus, my favorite game of all time, and I've never played Ico before, or is it Ico? So
it's Ico.
Yeah, okay, good. Ico. So that'll be really interesting, because I've never played that, and Shadow of Colossus is one of my favorites. I also got Uncharted Trilogy, and I also got the first Infamous, so those should all be interesting. The only problem, of course, is that I'm not going to have a lot of time to play those, because next weekend Dishonored comes out, and I have been dying to play that, and that'll be the time for me to dust off my 360 again and start playing on that.
All right. Now, before we move on, I have 2 questions I have to ask you, and these are the questions that we're all dying to hear. First and foremost, how do you think of that PS3 controller compared to playing on the Xbox controller for a good many years now?
The thing is, I played the PS2 a lot, and it's really weird going back to that DualShock controller, because it's been such a long time. So at the same time, it felt really nostalgic and kind of cool. But at the same time, you do realize that it's just not as comfortable as the 360 controller. Especially those...
And the one big difference that I would say overall, ergonomically, the Xbox controller is more comfortable. But the one main difference that they changed from the PS2 controller going to the PS3 controller is that rather than just having like buttons being the... R2 and L2 buttons, they change them to like these weird downward
weird trigger-ish things. They're but not really, they're very squishy.
They're not even curved triggers like the Xbox, where it really grips around your finger, and it's really great for shooters. It's more of stuff that kind of like dips downward, like it's curving the opposite way. So you're almost like sliding off of the controller. I've had a PS3 for a good like year to 2 years. Never liked it. I mean, I still play the games. If it's a good game on PS3, and it might only be on PS3, I'll play it, sure. But the controller, if I was ever to prefer or choose which one I would go with, the Xbox 360 controller or the PS3 controller, I would go the Xbox controller 10 out of 10 times. I just don't like those little paddle.
Yeah, especially in games like Grand Theft Auto 4, where you have to use the trigger to like pedal for driving, and could get insanely uncomfortable for like a driving game like that. Because I actually just beat the first Uncharted, which was, because the thing is, I've beaten the second Uncharted before when I didn't have a PS3. I played it at a neighbor's house, and I adored it. And I decided to play the first one, go back on that. And they have vehicle sections where you ride a jet ski in that game, in the first one. And they control so horribly. And what doesn't help is that squishy R2 button. Those weird semi-trigger things that make no sense to me, that just feel really uncomfortable, and they're just really terrible to control. Other than that, the game is really solid, just not as good or polished as Uncharted 2.
Now, my second question happens to be, and please bear with me here, but Chris, how many dicks did you have to suck to get that PS3? A lot? A lot. I knew it. Okay, thanks for answering my question. Now I can move on.
Yep. It was, if you want an exact number, it was actually 27.
All right.
That's a lot of dicks.
I was pretty close. It was definitely a lot. I knew the answer before I was even asking, but I just,
a whole chain of
just wanted to clarify that. I want to make sure. I know. So, game-wise, I now know what you've been playing a little bit. You seem to be enjoying it. I know you started like Uncharted 1 and everything, which I have to
find. I actually
find.
Beat it, so now I'm going back on Uncharted 2.
Okay. Yeah, Uncharted 1 I find to be really underrated. I feel like a lot of people just kind of like shirk that game off and just jump to Uncharted 2.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, hey, Uncharted 2 is a big improvement, but I think Uncharted 1 is a really, really like solid, surprising.
It's really solid.
Mm-hmm. Now, for me, all I've been playing the past 2 weeks or so, many hours of one game on both Xbox and consoles. I mean, on Xbox and PS3. I mean, I just messed up three times. I've been playing Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2. I've been dabbling in Borderlands 2 both on Xbox and PC, both well over 10 hours on both platforms, and then, of course, Torchlight 2 on PC because it's a PC exclusive. Now, they're both very similar games, being very loot-driven. However, Borderlands 2 happens to be focusing solely on the shooting with guns and everything, and Torchlight 2 is more traditional Diablo clone. You can use various different types of weapons, different types of classes, like an Outlander, which uses various guns and is very long-range focused, or it could be a Berserker, which is very up close and uses close quarters melee combat and stuff like that. But it's very Diablo-esque, where it's not like a shooter, it's more just kind of like a beat-em-up, you could say. But there are also two very, very different games outside of just the pure gameplay that I feel is a nice contrast, but I get a good idea of both. And I have very different gripes compared to the two playing both side by side, where I'm being satisfied by one and being unsatisfied by another while I'm still enjoying both as a whole. Now, there's a lot of people that I've been reading up on that seem to be very favorable towards Borderlands 2, and a lot of reviews were very much, they praised it a lot. And
yeah,
it made
me kind of jealous that I decided not to dip in on that. But I just haven't had the time because, you know, I'm away from my 360, and that's a big time-consuming game.
And Borderlands 1 happened to be one of my most memorable, one of my favorite multiplayer experiences that I've played by far are this gen. I had a blast with the game. Yes, it was repetitive. Yes, the quests were very MMO-like of just go here, kill this many enemies, or get this item and bring it right back. It had very samey quests that just kind of blended throughout the entire game. The first game has its problems. There's a lot of things that are missing from it that should be standards in an RPG like it. But I still had a blast with it, and it was an invaluable experience that I treasure greatly. So going into Borderlands 2, it was easily my most excited game so far of this year, with Dishonored being a very close second, or at least of the fall, I should say. And I had a lot of expectations for Borderlands 2. I was really hoping they were going to really expand upon this game and all their little faults and just take a lot of the fan feedback that they knew of what needed to be included in, while also just using the knowledge that they learned of building the first game, being a smaller team, and now expanding to the bigger Gearbox team that they now are after the success of Borderlands 1 and various other projects and stuff like that. I expected to get this big, huge-scale sequel. However, that's not really the case with Borderlands 2. I did get a much better story, a very improved structure. Like, it feels noticeably different. It feels like they have an actual pacing going along the way, rather than in Borderlands 1, it just kind of feels like they just drop you down there and just, hey, go crazy with quests. Or this one, it feels like it always is leading you in a specific path or direction, and it's leading to specific set pieces and stuff like that. However, it still is very, or not very, but it's still MMO-like, where there's a bunch of side quests and story quests, and you got to do a bunch of stuff, but there's a lot of variety in terms of what you do in those quests, and the story is still very inobtrusive, but there's still something there for people that want to actually pay attention and listen to it. Like, Handsome Jack is a very charismatic but very unsympathetic, I guess you kind of say, character, but he's always entertaining to listen to. You're always like hearing him listen, or you're always like listening to his dialogue and stuff like that, because he usually has some kind of funny quip at the expense of your character. But outside of that, when it comes to just down to the gameplay, the skills, the loot, and everything, that's where I start to have a little bit of problems with it. And one of the main things that I tend to keep going back to it after playing a good 20 hours or so of this game is that I've dabbled in both the Commando class and the Gunslinger class. The Commando class is basically the substitute for the Soldier class in the original Borderlands 2. His skill, or his main ability, happens to revolve around using a turret. The Gunslinger is all about using an ability that allows him to dual-wield weapons at the same time while increasing health, increasing the amount of ammo you can carry, and the damage and whatnot. One is the tank, one is the support character. I've dabbled in both, I've wanted to try them, and the result of it is that I really, really do not like either of these guys' skill trees, which is usually a very big thing when it comes to these kinds of loot-driven games. That shows that you are progressing, you are gaining these new abilities, you are becoming more powerful, and you're kind of becoming, in a sense, kind of like a god, in a sense. But in Borderlands 1, I remember playing just solely the soldier, but I loved a lot of his skills that you could learn over time. Like, I remember one specifically was one that they ended up transferring over to Maya, the siren in the sequel, was the soldier originally had the skill where you were able to use your bullets as, like, healing potions.
Yeah, you shoot your allies and that heals them.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly it. And there were various other skills that the soldier got and the other classes got that I was aware of that changed how you played. And that was something that Gearbox was really trying to hammer down with the first game, especially with the abilities, was that these abilities and these skills you get should be changing how you play rather than just running around and shooting people. It should be changing how you think you should be approaching a certain encounter or an environment or a fight or what have you. In Borderlands 2, it all feels like, and this is from two different classes, I've heard that the Assassin class and the Siren classes in Borderlands 2 are much better, that people are really enjoying them. And I guess maybe I just happen to get the shaft and choose the shitty classes, but that should not be the case with this type of game. And with these classes, it feels like I'm just getting these skills that say, okay, sometimes bullets won't recognize as bullets. So let's say you're running low on 20 bullets of ammo. So let's say I get lucky and maybe it doesn't recognize two ammo. So that means I still get to use those, and it kind of helps me in certain fights where ammo is scarce or something like that. Or let's say it lowers the recoil reduction, and it increases my fire rate or something like that. It's really just stuff that is enhanced or increasing my ability to shoot at things better. It's not actually changing how I play or changing how I approach anything. It's really just making the shooting better. And that's all I've experienced with both of these classes, or at least with a Gunzerker. With the Commando, however, it just seems to be the same thing, but apply that to my guns and to my turret. And it doesn't feel like I'm changing how I play, and that's a big problem for me, because going between Borderlands 2
well,
and
how
then
far are you
Forza
in
2...
levels? Maybe, like, in the later levels you do get more advanced abilities, or is that not the case?
On PC, I'm about, like, level 20 or so. I'm close to there. Like, I know that the 50 level cap is that, but you can still look at your skill trees, plan everything out ahead of time. It doesn't seem that's the case. It seems like the only way that it will kind of change how I play is once I get to the final skill that I unlock in a skill path, which they now have three of them, which, by the way, feel very linear because they start off in two branching paths in each three of the different paths, where let's say it's starts off with like a two-prong thing, but then it leads down into one thing. So it's very linear in how it progresses. There's not a lot of pure customizability. Like, there's no builds in the game. There's no specific type of build you can play as. I mean, maybe you might be going for one that gets more crits or something like that, but there's never something you can... most instances when you're playing with other people, you'll usually... Let's say if four people are playing as the Gunzerker, each of those four people are going to be very similar in how they set up their perks or how their character looks, or not perks, but and how the character looks. Like, there's not going to be this huge disparage. I don't remember the word. I'm kind of messing up on this. Compared to, like, let's say Diablo 2, where people have been playing that game for over 10 years now, and builds are vastly different compared to other people, where you can play as somebody that's like a speedy character that flies right past characters and is solely just going for loot and stuff, and he's kind of like he gets in there and gets out as fast as he gets in there in the beginning, or someone that plays as like a tank, or someone that plays as this strong crit damaging healer, or a strong crit damaging tank of a mage or something like that. There's various different types of builds in what should be good Diablo clone-like games. But in Borderlands 2, it just feels very... It's like they didn't expand... They didn't expand upon what they had originally established with the first game. And if anything, I would say the skill trees are worse in the sequel than they are in the first game. And that's a really big disappointment for me. And that just carries on without various other things. Like, I would say even with the quests and the storyline and everything, while it feels better and it feels like they took more time with it, at the same time, I just feel like it's a big retread over the first game. And it's a shame, because I'm with a bigger team and with the amount of resources that were being put into this game, with something that will be a bona fide hit. Like, yeah. If I remember correctly, Borderlands 2 happened to have, like, the highest pre-orders, or one of the highest amount of pre-orders in the UK, and will, without a doubt, one of the highest pre-orders that 2K has ever experienced. Like, it's going to be a high-selling game. And with that kind of manpower and the fact that it's going to sell well, I was just hoping that they were going to really expand upon this game and try to make it, like, this true Borderlands 2. Whereas right now, I feel like I've put in a lot of hours into this game, and overall, I just feel like it's just like Borderlands 1.5, and that's not what I want to be getting out of. And another thing that I'm thinking of that really bothers me about this is that at the beginning of the game, all the environments feel very distinct, similar to how Borderlands 1 was. Where in Borderlands 1, everything was very brown, all was kind of same and stuff. But the weird thing was that you backtracked so much in Borderlands 1 that it became ingrained in your mind or in your memory, so that you could remember where each individual part was, or where each individual point was, or city was, and everything. So you don't have to get there as fast as because you've memorized it so well. Whereas in Borderlands 2, you're not backtracking nearly as much. It's been a couple quests where you have, and it gets a little bit annoying. But once you get to, like, the middle of the game, which is where I'm at right now, everything starts to kind of feel very samey, and you lose your sense of direction very easily, because nothing feels like it's directing you in a specific path or direction where you normally should be going into, where you're going to a quest, or you're going back to, like, a portal to go to a different area.
Oh, they still do, like, portals to different areas? It's still not, like, a full-on open world, like, say, like, Infamous or GTA or something like that?
It's not a full-on open world. It's segmented, but the actual segment
Yeah, the segments are open world, but that's a shame because I would have loved it like a true open world Borderlands.
I agree with that, but I like how they did it with this one. My problem is it's just that everything just feels like they took a level designer or a map designer and they just kind of went, let's just put everything here in this random jumbled order, and it doesn't make any sense, and it bothers me no other because I'll be trying to travel a place with another player in co-op, and I'll be the one driving. And
you mean the new mini map that they've added doesn't help things?
It doesn't really that much. It is nice that they added a mini map, even if that should have been in the first game to begin with. I mean, it's nice that it's in there now, even though it's a standard. But it doesn't really help that much with the navigation. I usually have to still be playing main or large map like I did in the first game to find my way around. But it still doesn't feel like I can. Like, I'll be going in the same place multiple times, but I still feel like I'm getting lost. And that shouldn't be the case. It feels annoying sometimes to play. And I mean, overall, I'm having fun with Borderlands 2. I'd still say it's a fun game. I'd still say if you liked Borderlands 1, you will probably still like Borderlands 2 and still have a fun time out of it. It just feels like this big, big missed opportunity. Like, they could have done something really big and expansive and really just gone crazy with it. I feel like they should be going crazy with this game, similar to how the Saints Row guys are going crazy with each new iteration of Saints Row. Whereas if they stayed stagnant with that series, people wouldn't buy the new game. People are wanting to buy those new games because they want the newest and craziest thing to see what they're going to do next. But Borderlands 2, it just kind of feels like they're just retreading the same waters they did in the first game.
That's weird because everyone else has been saying that it's like a full-on like big improvement. But
no, I know a few people that I've followed that feel similarly as well, and it's just disappointing to me. It feels very different compared to Torchlight 2, which I will get into now. Which Torchlight 1 is a good version, is a good Diablo game. Very much like Diablo 1. Where it's small in compared to its sequels. It feels like it's just very smaller, segmented areas in a very larger dungeon. It's not like there'll be any big open environments and then you get to many different dungeons. It's all taking place in one spiraling dungeon that you keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into. So it feels smaller scaled, but they had something there that they could build upon. And they had a solid base. And they did what they did with Torchlight 2 is exactly what I wanted out of Borderlands 2. Whereas with Torchlight 2, they expanded on everything. They had a pet system in Torchlight 1, which is like... Now, the pet system was Torchlight 1's original, like, main innovative feature that no other Diablo clone or looting game had done before. Where you always... Or you recruit a pet in the very beginning of the game, and it's following you throughout your entire adventure, and it has its own inventory that is separate from your main character's inventory, so that if you have a bunch of items and you're running out of space in your inventory, you can put those items and then store it in your pet's inventory. And then, if your pet's inventory becomes full, you can send your pet into town while you are still exploring the dungeon, and it will sell all of your items for you, and then give you back the gold, and it will come back in the span of like a minute or 2 minutes. And on the side, the pet can also attack the enemies along with you and everything, and you can equip a very limited amount of items to it, so you can increase its skills and everything. It was a very cool system that had never been done in any kind of looting game beforehand, and I hope and wish that other games will kind of take a similar feature to that or try to expand upon something like that. Where in Torchlight 2, they already do expand upon it, where not only now can you send the town or can you send the pet into town and then it will sell your items for you, you can also give it a quote-unquote a shopping list where you'll select, hey, I want you to go buy 3 different big red healing potions and maybe one healing or mana healing potion, and then it'll use the money that you already have in your basically your inventory, your pouch, amount of money that you've amassed over, and it will spend the specific amount of money that it needs to buy those potions without you having to go all the way back into town and then spending the money at a specific vendor and then buying those potions. So you can't buy items or anything, it's purely just potions and specific purpose items like that, and they expanded upon that. And not only that, but the movement speed is faster, so you feel like you're able to navigate around the zones and the areas much faster than you could before, and it feels much easier to do and much more accessible. The actual map sizes are like 2-3 times as big as Torchlight 2's like individual zones and areas. And not only that, the environments have a huge amount of variety. The opening of the game is located in this big grassy outdoor environment that's completely different than Torchlight 1, which Torchlight 1 was always located indoor. And the map size is so big that I feel like I'm spending a good like 15 or so minutes just trying to explore everything else, and then you move on to the next area, which is just as big as the last time before. And even better, the loot system is better than this game. I feel like I'm always getting good stuff every turn and every encounter that I'm feel like I'm always getting more interesting stuff, more cool looking stuff. It's just there's better randomization in terms of the looted items in general compared to Torchlight 1. I feel like as a whole, Torchlight 2 is this huge step up in every single way compared to Torchlight 1, and it's such a satisfying experience. It's where I can start playing it, and it's really hard to drag me away from it like 4 or 5 hours later. I'll just be absolutely absorbed into the game. And I'm still not done with it yet. I'm in the middle of Act 2, which, by the way, just the first act of Torchlight 2 is bigger than the entire first game of Torchlight 1, which is, for those that have played it, should show how big it is. And I feel like I've already played about like 13 or so hours of it, and I'm a little over halfway into it. I think I'm really getting close to getting to that third final act of it, but I really don't have any major complaints with it so far. And I'm not one to really care too much about respecking in looting games or anything like that. Like, I know for certain people that can be a really big deal, which, if you don't know, respecking basically means, let's say I'm playing,
yeah, like let's say you want to reset your skill tree, kind of.
Resetting your skill tree without losing any of your skill points. So if I put all my skill points into this certain branch of skills, I can now reset all of them, and while I'm still the same level with all the same amount of skill points, and then and put them into a separate branching tree that I want to play it a certain different way or something like that. There is no true respec system in this game. The respec system in this game that they have currently is that you can only respec the last three skills that you had last put points into. And the reason why they have this is because the developers of the game, who were a bunch of ex-members of Blizzard back when they made Diablo 1 and Diablo 2, and they have said in the past that they are not a fan of the respec system, which is why they didn't originally include one in Torchlight 1, and why they didn't include a legit respec system in Torchlight 2, but because of some fan outcry, they decided to at least come to some kind of compromise and add in this little minor system. And I'm not really one to really respec. I'd rather just create a whole new character and build it off of that, because if I'm enjoying it, I want to keep replaying it and play it in different ways. I like that. That's just how I play as in these type of games. So it's not a big deal to me, and it's not even really a complaint, but I understand the complaint from people that do that, because there's plenty of people that will sink in many, many more hours than I will into these type of games, trying to explore and test every inch and facet of this game and what it can do. And it's just not that type of feature is not really for me, so it's not a big complaint for me. So outside of that, I've had a lovely experience with Torchlight 2. I think it's an excellent game, and especially for $20, it's an absolute steal with how much
lots of content.
And I haven't even gotten a chance to play co-op with it yet, because I'm honestly just wanting to play through the entire game by myself one time, and then when I play through subsequent playthroughs, which I plan to do because of how much I'm just enjoying sinking hours into this game, I'll plan to play with other people that I know of that got this game, which I'm glad I have quite a few friends on Steam so far that have gotten this. I'm hoping this game is selling well compared to Borderlands 2, which came out 2 days beforehand. But yeah. I mean, I'm having plenty of fun with Borderlands 2, but I feel like I'm having quite a few gripes that might seem minor on face value in Borderlands 2, but are going a long ways for me as I keep getting deeper and deeper into it. And I feel like all these little minor gripes that I'm having in Borderlands 2, I'm having instead, rather than being gripes in Torchlight 2, I'm immensely satisfied by, because they do it far better. And I know they're pretty different games, but at its core, they're very, similar. So that's just my experience with both of those. So that's all I've been playing recently.
All right, cool. Well, I already mentioned Uncharted 1, which I've been enjoying, and then there's I just started up Uncharted 2, and this is actually my third time going through it, and this is, and you know something interesting? This is the first time I've gone through a PS3 and actually had the HDMI cord plugged in, because the one that my neighbor had, he didn't have an HDMI cord, so I finally got one plugged in, and the difference is insanely noticeable.
Did you play with the standard definition cords the entire time, like the white?
Yeah,
red?
on my neighbor. Yeah, exactly.
I hate that the PS3 doesn't come with an HDMI
Yeah,
cable.
It's really weird.
The Slim, because the HDMI cable is almost like a standard at this point. I remember I got one with my Xbox Elite like a year, actually no, like 3 years before I got my PS3. So yeah, it's a huge difference.
Yeah, insanely huge difference. But the biggest difference I noticed was the difference between Uncharted 1's animations and graphics and Uncharted 2's. And, like, Uncharted 1, it's a pretty game, but Uncharted 2, like, my god, the animations are incredibly smooth now that I've, like, compared them back-to-back and with the HDMI cable. And everything just looks crisper, and the facial animations look a bit less dead. I mean, it's still, like, you know, it's the Uncanny Valley still has been perfected, of course, but it's definitely more expressive and less dead eyes than the first Uncharted did.
A much more cinematic, very visually appealing game. It looks fantastic still. I
Yeah,
agree.
definitely. And, like, especially, like, the smoothness of the animations that I noticed, especially comparing them between Uncharted 1 and 2 back to back. It's really, really noticeable, and you can tell, like, just how much insane manpower had to be put into this game. And I can't wait to beat this so I could play Uncharted 3, which as of now is the only Uncharted game that I haven't gone through yet.
Which I'm interested to hear from you about, because I feel like I never heard too much about Uncharted 3 after it released. I feel like a lot of people like it, but it wasn't as good as Uncharted 2. But otherwise, I don't know anything else about it, so...
Yeah,
Whenever you get
there are
a
a few
chance,
people who said that the story wasn't as good and it's like the weakest one. But you know what, actually? I actually heard from like a few critics that I do respect that it's actually the best story in this series, because it's the only time Nathan Drake feels kind of like a human character. Because Nathan Drake in the other Uncharted games, he's an incredibly likable protagonist. He's always charming and he's always quick to make a gag or a joke every single, like, harrowing moment throughout the game. And there are a lot of people who actually belong in this camp that's really anti-Nathan Drake. Like, Zero Punctuation especially really dislikes, like, Nathan Drake's smarmy attitude and whatnot. But they actually pointed out Uncharted 3 is the first game where you actually start to see some cracks in the Nathan Drake image that are actually really interesting. And I still haven't played it, of course, so I don't really know what exactly they are, but that sounds really interesting. So, like, again, I'll have to see, and I'll report back when I finally play it, which could be a while.
That and he's that, like, impenetrable, like, archetype kind of hero, which, I mean, it fits those first two games very nicely. So, I mean, I'm interested to hear with the third game, because otherwise I don't feel like I've read very many impressions or really read any reviews or heard anything from people that have actually played it that I know of.
Yeah, because the thing is, Uncharted 3 actually came out pretty quickly after Uncharted 2, if I remember.
Plus, it came out during a really packed time. I think last year it was. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
I think
it was... Yeah, it came out like as a whole bunch of games. Like, I'm trying to remember which games say that. I think it came out as Skyrim was also out, and it was in that November slot where all the big
games. Shortly or something like that, yeah.
I know Skyrim was one of them.
I think Uncharted 3 was like 11/2, like November 2nd, and then Skyrim was
Now I remember.
9 days later. 9 days later, I think. So yeah, it definitely got lost in the shuffle because everybody...
Yeah, and also, like, I think Modern Warfare 3 came out the week after Uncharted 3, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably didn't really help, but yeah, I'll definitely see when I play it, but as of now, I'm going back through Uncharted 2, enjoying it all over again.
All right.
And I guess that's it.
That is it, yeah. So this week, there wasn't too much interesting that came out, but the one exciting
the one big movie.
that we both got to see was the new Rian Johnson flick Looper.
Yeah, this is actually
Tell me,
this.
what is Looper?
Looper is Rian Johnson's first Hollywood movie, actually, which was it's pretty interesting. I love seeing like these niche independent directors like being able to make big Hollywood productions. Like I'm trying to think like how Christopher Nolan like went from Memento to Insomnia and Batman Begins and whatnot, and how Paul Thomas Anderson went from Heartache to Boogie Nights, and like really fascinated by how they handle that transition. And this is Rian Johnson's first studio film and whatnot, and it's a sci-fi action thriller time travel story. It takes place in this future world where at two specific years, 2044 and 2074, 30 years later. In 2074, time travel has been invented, and like just like a few years after it's been invented, it's already been outlawed because of, you know, time travel's fucking insane. Of course it's outlawed. And the only people who use it are the mafia, and pretty much the only use they have for time travel because of all of the tagging that's there in the future is being able to dispose bodies into the past. That way, all of the tags from the future and the police will never be able to locate the body, and they'll be able to get away with their murders completely scot-free. And back in 2044, they have these assassins called Loopers that basically wait in the middle of like an empty building or field or something like that, and they wait for their target to appear, and they just immediately shoot on sight and dispose of the body. And they're just like, you know, in league with the future, basically. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays one of these loopers. His name is Joe. You know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Joe. Har har, we see what you did there, Rian Johnson. And,
Hey, they're good buddies.
yeah, they are good
They can do
buddies.
whatever they want.
They worked together on Brick, which was his first movie. Which, by the way, people
Rian
should check that
Johnson's
out.
first movie. Yeah.
Yeah,
Good movie.
exactly. And, basically, Joe is this looper. He's incredibly successful. He's paid in these really big, bulky bars of silver that, like, you know, they pay the bills and he hoards them all to get really rich, and it's able to feed kind of this drug addiction that he has. Which, an interesting thing that Rian Johnson does in the future. Apparently, in the future, drugs are administered through eye drops instead of injecting or smoking, which is actually pretty pragmatic if you think about it. Like, instead of having to go through the trouble of smoking it or like having to put a needle in your veins, like put an eye drop, it just immediately goes into your bloodstream. But you know, that's a totally different story. Anyway, Joe, he's an incredibly successful looper, and one day, while he's waiting for his next target to come, his next target ends up being the older version of himself 30 years from the future. And this is a process that's known as, quote unquote, closing the loop. And apparently, this thing has been happening with a bunch of different loopers. And basically, Joe, the younger Joe, has to figure out how this is happening, what his older self's motivations are, and insane plot twists ensue, a lot of paradoxes. And just a brilliant premise in general, and I like to hear what you think of it first, because you know, we were both excited for it, and you were really enthusiastic, so I definitely want to hear what
Oh
your
yeah.
take is.
Now, I wrote down, and I've said this many times, even to you, even on Twitter, I wrote down a good page and a half or so of notes. I have
I wrote a
so
full
much
on
that
review.
was I yeah, you did write a full-on review. But this was stuff just preparing for this podcast. So there's a lot of stuff that is still going through my mind now, seeing it twice. I saw it on Friday, and then I just actually back from seeing it about 3 hours ago. And I still have all this stuff that's just running through my head, various different theories for specific things, and just little notes that I wanted to write down that Rian Johnson just has this very meticulous attention to detail in a lot of things regarding his world building and everything. Like, he really creatively creates, or creatively creates, really masterfully, I should say, creates this dystopian setting, this dystopian sci-fi world that this movie, at the backdrop of this movie, takes place in. And it feels very relatable yet familiar. Like, there's, it's grounded, it's not too far into the future, but there's still some sci-fi elements that do feel a little bit different that you're able to notice here and there that don't feel exactly like the typical city that you would normally go to.
Yeah, it's
and
pretty
I like
it's
that.
It's just like rich people are richer, poor people are poorer, and there are some hover cars just lying around everywhere.
However, there's also a lot of homeless people that are just surrounded around many
yeah,
different areas and
I
a lot of different
meant
drifters and yeah. Well, poor people and homeless people. It's a big difference. But the thing with the city is that it feels very bleak, it feels very gritty and dark. It was very reminiscent to me of Blade Runner in a sense, but not with the same scale. But it has that same vibe where I feel like I'm going through these grimy back alleys of New York, but there's all these flashing lights and everywhere. And it's a specific thing in Looper is that there seems to be a lot of solar panels that are on the cars and on the buildings, and enormous ones that are on the apartment buildings and various different skyscrapers and stuff. It feels like the city is slowly falling apart because it doesn't necessarily have this exact pristine kind of order that really holds it all together. The only order that holds it together is this very very convoluted organizing of the mob that is run by this one time traveler named Abe, who is played by Jeff Daniels, who, it isn't too big of a spoiler, but he does play a very integral character even from the very beginning of the movie. But he runs this mob that is known as the Gapmen, and in a lower tier of like this very of like a job class, you could say, almost like a hierarchy, and I don't remember the names, I'm blanking, but and like the Loopers are basically like the lower tree of this of the power tree. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the Gapmen are basically like the higher up guys, the guys that he has specifically hired to do all the dirty work. And they're, I don't know what kind of sci-fi film they're reminiscent of, but it's something, because outside of that, these guys have this very distinct style. They have a very distinct look that you know that they are like the villains. They wear these black trench coats. They sometimes wear some black thin hats, like the ones that show up in specific parts of the film. But mostly you just recognize them as these very tall, ominous black figures. And they're the ones that are running the city and everything. And those are the ones that are truly creating this order in the city and that's slowly holding it together. And I don't know. I liked how created the city or how created this world, because it feels wholly original, yet it feels somewhat inspired
by all sorts
of
different
various sci-fi films. Yeah, but it feels like he took all these various pieces and combined them all together to feel something that feels unique in its own context. And I really dug that about the movie, because I've seen so many different sci-fi movies that have come out in the past few years, and they're taking from various different movies, but Looper is like the first movie I've seen in years that it just feels original. It feels unique. It feels like someone really took the time to try to craft its world and craft its logic and its physics and the whole time traveling aspect of it. And it all works and it all comes together very nicely. And Looper is like this perfect blend of drama and action with a sci-fi world that I'm saying just that feels wholly unique, and it never really explains what the future is like, but it shows it very
Yeah, it's basically telling a story through visuals, yeah. Which is the best way to go about
it. All through visuals, but it's a very understated sci-fi because it has a very greater focus on character, and it's not solely focused on its world, which sometimes sci-fi films can kind of come into its own trappings trying to do. But I loved it. It's kind of hard for me to go through all these notes. It's just kind of like a jumbling of various different things. Kind of like they're like the homeless people everywhere, the hovering bikes, where there's also clashing with the really beat up looking hybrid cars that happen to have these tiny little like solar panels that are on like the hood of it almost makes you think that the car manufacturing in this world that takes place in Kansas is like almost now like defunct. That they're now trying to survive on these rusting out cars that they've been driving for like 40 plus years, it seems. From what I remember, like the camera work is far better than it has been in his past films. I feel like Rian Johnson is slowly becoming this more cinematic director, where in the beginning he kind of stumbled on stuff. Brick feels very amateurish, even though I really do dig that movie a lot. And Brothers Bloom, he was definitely showing improvements of that. And I feel like Looper, I think he's really expanding on various ideas of how to frame specific scenes and how to make stuff cinematic. However, his only true faults is the action scenes, which I feel like he tries his best, but they're not.
Yeah, the action scenes are competent, but they're not memorable.
Yeah.
Per se.
And there's not too many true action scenes.
But just wondering, did you notice a few people have said that one of his stylistic influences is actually David Fincher. Did you notice any Fincher-ish elements in it? Because I actually noticed a lot of Fincher type things going on in the camera work and whatnot.
There's some things that I can see now where he worked with panning, and specifically in various coordinates I can see. Because I noticed that when they're in the dystopian city, they love to use a lot of hallways, very closed in hallways, or panning around the side of a door and stuff like that. It's similar to David Lynch in that regard, but otherwise I don't really see.
You mean David Fincher, not David Lynch?
Oh, I got confused.
Wouldn't you love an action movie that was inspired by David Lynch?
I wish that was a real thing. That would be awesome. But David
Fincher.
David Fincher, maybe just in terms of coloring and hues with the city and everything.
Yeah, very grimy.
I don't know about action scenes, but yeah, it's very much grimy and dark and kind of gritty, similar to Seven and Zodiac and stuff like that. But one other thing, aside from the direction, that I did want to bring up is that I found out that his cousin, Nathan Johnson, was the guy that has composed all three of his films so far, and even him I feel like is improving as he goes as a composer, where I think his score for Looper doesn't really stand, or I mean, it, looking back on it, it's not stuff that really sticks with you after you see the movie, but in the context when you're seeing the movie, there's a lot of moments that really hit you hard, but there's a lot of stuff that feels kind of non-existent or it stalls. But there, when he tries to capitalize a specific action scene or an emotional scene or something in between, he knows when to hit it really hard, because it feels like this very kind of grindy electronica. It's the only thing I can really compare it to is something similar to Nine Inch Nails, kind of like Trent Reznor.
Huh. Yeah, he's done with this. That's a good thing.
It's similar, yeah. But with the actual movie, I thought the pacing was overall very good, and I thought it was consistently engaging the entire time from scene to scene, straight from the get-go. And I know that you had a little bit of problems with some of the structure of this movie. And
It's more of a pacing issue, but we'll talk about that later.
And seeing it a second time, I feel like those problems that I might have had before were alleviated, and I saw reasons why he might have put it in there, or I liked it better as a whole the second time seeing it. I like that the first half of this movie takes place in the city, setting up Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, just establishing the younger Joe and establishing the city, and then establishing all the time traveling aspects. And then it introduces older Joe, played by Bruce Willis. And then it gets to this middle portion, this diner scene, that I consider the middle of the movie, and it slows the film to an absolute halt. I know the diner scene is very important in the context of the movie.
Yeah, and I really love the diner scene. It has a lot of tension, because it's just two people talking in a room. It's the only scene where they're really, really interacting with each other, and that's incredibly important, and I really love that tension. However, everything kind of after that in Act 2, that's the part that I really felt slowed things to a halt.
And it was a little different for me, because I don't feel like there was too much tension in it. It has a lot of good dialogue in it. It has a lot of nice jokes, like the little reference back to certain languages that younger Joe is learning throughout the movie and stuff like that. Little jokes about stuff that happened earlier on. But just the actual scene and what it has to do and everything, it's important, but it feels like it drags compared to the rest of the movie, where I feel like the first half of the movie has this great...
Yeah, the first half of the movie is incredibly propulsive.
It has this great forward momentum. Yeah, and it just keeps
exactly.
going and going and going. Even if some scenes are slower, I always feel like I'm engaged and interested to see what happens next. And then it gets to this diner scene, and I feel like this is kind of dragging on a little bit
I
too
don't
long.
know. I
And
personally thought that the diner scene still felt propulsive because even though it was much slower, it still felt like there was a bunch of tension. So I still feel like that worked. Whereas, like, when he, without spoiling anything, when he goes to this farm, that's the point where I feel like it really does kind of slow down. But thankfully, it does get more and more interesting, and you do kind of realize that there truly is a reason, and I totally get why he decided to structure it the way he structured it. I just need to see this movie again. I feel like I'll fully appreciate it the second time around.
that's what I got after seeing the second time, was I was able to see something much more clear when I could just look at it as an entire whole rather than having to focus on the story bit by bit as it went along. Because after the diner scene ends and it focuses more on the second half of the movie, which is all farm with little bits and pieces of the city. And when it focuses an all farm, I feel like it picks back up to this forward momentum that it was going
Really?
along in the first half, in the first half of the movie.
Huh.
Where looking back at it and seeing it a second time, I really dig this juxtaposition of this grim, dimly lit, dark city that feels kind of like mankind and humanity gone wrong. And then it juxtaposes the second half of the movie, which is the original, the very familiar American landscape of what you imagine with farms and crops and various cornfields and things like that, but with little hints of sci-fi and little hints of future into it. And it's very
Yeah.
brightly lit and very colorful. It's very lit, few scenes that are very dark. And I like that juxtaposition between the two of light and dark and everything. And I know a lot of people would say it's abrupt, and I agree. The change is abrupt because it's not what you're used to for sitting there for the first like good hour. But seeing it a second time, I just really dug it, and I never had a problem with it the first time I saw it. But I was able to see that connection the second time I did, and it's really weird to me that the movie I love it for the first half, then it gets this diner scene where
Oh, I really
I
disagree with you on
just
that.
don't really like it nearly as much as other people do, and then it continues. He's back being as great as the first half of it in the second half of the movie, where I just everything about this movie I loved, aside from the diner scene, which I don't really hate.
Ah.
I just feel like it halts it where it doesn't need to. I feel like there's many diner scenes in other movies where they can keep things like engaging or having a momentum keep going. Maybe if the dialogue was snappier, like if they were going back a little bit snappier, where I feel like they take some time to pause and think about something, or for Bruce Willis to reflect on something or something like that. Like it doesn't feel fast enough. Maybe similar to like a Quentin Tarantino movie, which is completely different than Ryan Johnson's style. But
I don't know. I
maybe
thought
if
it
it was.
totally worked. And I feel
I know a
like the
lot of people.
reason why it worked was because of those performances where you're able to really see like the ways Joseph Gordon-Levitt really truly does parallel Bruce Willis. And you truly do see how these two people really are the same person, and those performances are brilliant. And not only that, but the things that they are talking about, even if like maybe the writing like isn't quick enough for you, I personally wasn't. I was personally fine with it, but everything they were talking about was interesting. All of the paradoxes, and even then, like there was this point where they were like, "We need to talk about time travel," and Bruce Willis is like, "No, if we keep talking about time travel, we'll start making diagrams out of straws and whatnot." And like the movie wisely doesn't explain things too much, but it gives you just enough through both visuals and just short statements that you're able to piece things together in your head, which is really cool. And not only that, but the thing that really surprised me the most about Looper is that it's surprisingly really emotional, and
I
it's
agree,
much
yes.
more of a drama than it is an action film or a thriller or even a sci-fi movie. It's mainly a drama about these two people and about how we can't escape the cycles that keep bringing us back, whether it's cycles of addiction, cycles of revenge, and you know, all these different things just like commingle into this thematic whole. And I really like that. Like, my only problem with the movie or problems is that A, I do feel like everything in the farm kind of is very abruptly put into a halt, and the way we're introduced to Emily Blunt's character, it kind of breaks the flow. It's kind of unnatural because like we've never seen her before, and then all of a sudden she's just really important. And thankfully, Emily Blunt is a good enough actress that you're able to forgive it. But like my one complaint, and this isn't even so much of a complaint as it is a plea, and it's just that I really, really wanted more scenes with Bruce Willis, because I thought his character, the older Joe, was the most interesting and tragic character in the entire movie. I wanted the whole movie to be about him, and having to, like, spend through almost all of Act 2 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Emily Blunt in this farm, it was interesting, but I really wanted to spend more time Bruce Willis. Not only that, this is the best performance Bruce Willis has given in a long time. He is really good in this movie. Uh-huh. And just his weary, weary face conveys so much pain. And that's really, really important to the story, because you really need to feel that tragic, I don't want to give it away, but just this tragic past that he has. And one of my favorite scenes, my favorite scene in this movie, and one of my favorite scenes of the entire year so far, is that scene where you, like, it's kind of a flashback where you see, like, Bruce Willis's lifetime, and it kind of jumps between.
Are you saying the year 1 to 3?
Yeah, years 1 through 30. Yeah, that montage. That thing
All right. is insanely... That was well done. I liked it.
Yeah, it's insanely gorgeous. The music is beautiful. It's gorgeously photographed. And it's almost like a silent movie. There's absolutely no dialogue, and everything is conveyed through these simple images. And it just feels incredibly tender and gorgeous. And then when it gets to that tragic moment, it actually felt really heartbreaking to me.
You feel pretty invested in it in a short amount.
Yeah, in a short amount of time, in just like less than 5 minutes, you feel like you've spent a lifetime with these characters. And I adore that. And that was why I wanted to see more scenes with Bruce Willis. And I ended up being sort of disappointed when it was actually more about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So that's kind of a complaint that I have.
Now here's where you're going to hate me here, because I don't feel exactly as strongly as you do about Bruce Willis in this movie, where I feel like he isn't given very much material. I can agree with you on that. And he makes that material work very well in
with
the
what
constraints
little
he's given. And yes, he works with it surprisingly well, better than anything he's done in recent memory. However, I feel that the dynamic between Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Emily Blunt, and Sid, her son, feels that much more compelling, engaging, and I feel more emotionally invested as the movie went on with that dynamic between those three characters than I did with anything involving Bruce Willis. He has a very interesting story in what he's trying to do and what his end goal is. However, I just felt like the way Rian Johnson conveyed that on screen all the actions that he's trying to commit, I don't feel like is nearly as interesting as like this almost family dynamic that is going on between those three other characters. And that's why I like the farm scene so much, is because I felt that was just so much more compelling, because and it was one thing that I feel like most people should be going in to see this movie. They should be going in to see this movie blind. They should at the very most see the very first trailer with the dubstep. The very first trailer with the dubstep that very briefly and very coyly only brings up Emily Blunt like once or twice in the trailer, never has her saying anything or anything, but I don't remember it ever showing anything about her son. So going into this movie, I went on a blackout after the first trailer. I had no idea about the kid.
Yeah, they don't reveal it in the second trailer either.
No, I remember watching the one that you posted on your review, and they show him very briefly, but it's still very coy about everything. It's never seeming like there are any important characters.
Reminded me of Cabin in the Woods in that regard, where the advertising was really, really smart, and you never knew, because they genuinely wanted you to be surprised. Yeah. Which is so hard to do these days, what with like spy cameras everywhere and the fact that movie trailers these days like to spoil every goddamn thing and money shot in the movie.
And I think it's fine. I think it's fine to talk about the kid right now, just because it's us reviewing the movie, and
we're not going to say like the importance of the kid, but just to be,
I wouldn't say anybody should be listening to this if they haven't seen the movie yet. But this kid, not only is he a great child actor, like it's a rarity,
and he's so young too. Like usually the good child actors are 11 or so years old. This kid is probably like 6.
He seems like he is much older than he actually is. Like he has so much presence in just certain specific scenes, that he can control scenes better than even Joseph Gordon-Levitt can.
Yeah, I
And
agree with that.
little things like that is why I love this farm scene so much. And even Emily Blunt, who's playing completely against the typecast that she has been stuck with like being like the prissy British kid or the British chick in like The Devil Wears Prada and similar things like that. Like, I just, it's generally surprising kid and seeing Emily Blunt being so different. And then when you find out and there's these revelations that occur during the farm second half of the movie that happen over time, I just became increasingly more and more engaged with what's happening, and I wanted to see what was going to happen next, because I was just generally surprised that all this was happening. I wasn't expecting anything or that much to do with like the farm related stuff and what eventually unfolds in the movie. And what was I going to say? One thing that I think is interesting that I was able to catch on with the second time I saw it, and briefly after the first time I saw it, but I was able to see it more clearer the second time I saw it, was that Rian Johnson is very clear that he is trying to convey younger Joe as a very unsympathetic, very ruthless character.
Yeah.
That's very self-absorbed. He doesn't really care about anybody else except himself. At face value, in that half of the movie, once it gets to near like the diner scene, it's trying to show that Bruce Willis seems to be a character that changed emotionally. He changed everything about his character.
Yeah,
after he met
one of the interesting dynamics is that with most movies involving people meeting their older selves, it's like, oh wow, we're exactly alike, and then there'd be some jokes about that, or it would be like a buddy sort of thing. And in this one, because of that transformation, which is so interesting, and that was another reason why I really dug Bruce Willis's character, these two people are almost entirely different. There are like a few mannerisms and the face that's very similar, but other than that, entirely different motivations.
Now here's where I'm going to change, because it's trying to show that he has changed so much after he has met this woman in China, where he stopped being a drug addict, he cleaned up his act, he quit being a looper, he moved out to it's China, it's like halfway through the movie, not even earlier than that. So he moves out to China and tries to change his life and everything, and he believes woman is what changed his life as well and made him a better person. And he has good motives for coming back into the past and wanting to change everything. So that and I'm getting into some spoilery kind of stuff, but he wants to basically change his future by doing some good acts that are, or some good natured acts. However, what unfolds later on in the movie reveals him to be a lot different than what he made himself out to be in the diner.
Yeah,
scene,
yeah, exactly.
I feel like he becomes still a very self-centered character, where at his core he really hasn't changed from what. Where younger Joe was originally like in the beginning of the movie. They're still pretty terrible people.
Yeah, especially
they feel like they're doing good things. That's the difference, is that he
thinks
he's
like,
doing a good thing.
Well, like, the thing is, like, it would lead to a good end result, but, like, in order to get there, he has to commit these terrible atrocities that
the
are just, like...
justifies the
yeah,
means.
Exactly.
It's
yeah,
like,
exactly,
it's
that sort of thing.
It's going by. Yeah.
That's his sort of mentality.
And that's why I find these two characters, I should be saying, so fascinating, and how it's not this typical one-dimensional cardboard cutout type of character. They have various moral ambiguities about them. They have various goals that aren't the usual hero character. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is clearly the anti-hero type of character, or even some people could even argue is could possibly very well be the villain. But I find like he's so interesting that you could make her own assumptions about this, and that they aren't so clearly laid out by the end of this movie, and that's so
yeah. And also, like, his transformative arc from that anti-villain into someone you can actually kind of sympathize with is handled really well, and that's important considering the ending of the film. You have to really buy into that in order to buy the ending, and it
and I really wish I could
thankfully
go on,
works.
I really wish I could go into more spoilers, but I think that's like the gist of what I wanted to talk about with this movie, because I saw it the first time. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it from beginning to end, aside from the diner scene, which is really, in the grand scheme of things, is really such a minor thing, because it's not too long and it picks up immediately right after. And I just everything after it. I feel like
you have no idea how much I disagree with that.
I feel like it subverts so many expectations when it comes to this kind of action movie. I feel like Rian Johnson somehow pulls off so many different surprises that neither I was expecting, nor do I imagine any of the audience was expecting. Maybe something similar to the ending, but what leads to the ending is very surprising and very unexpected in terms of the twists and turns that it takes. And the second time seeing it, the diner scene was not nearly as a problem to me as it was the first time I saw it. I still feel like it kind of leads the movie into a halt, but it's not nearly as problematic to me. And I feel like the first two halves of this movie, aside from that one scene, are so well crafted, so well paced, so well acted, so well done. It feels like he creates this wholly unique world, and I keep saying that over and over again because I feel like I've seen so many recent sci-fi movies or movies in general that are trying to be different or trying to be unique, but one feels like it's just purely concentrated filmmaking. That he just took his time to write this unique script that's accessible at anybody. I could recommend this movie to anybody that I know that is willing to watch a little bit of violence and a little bit of time traveling, even if that might not be their thing. And I just can recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, definitely.
I would bet that would love it, yes. And it's just a movie that I love from beginning to end. And to be honest, going down the line later on this year, I'm going to be really struggling trying to decide whether or not I like this better than The Master and this.
Yeah. Yeah,
they are completely different movies.
Yeah, exactly. The Master is the kind of movie you can't really recommend to too many people.
Yeah, but I really need to see The Master a second time because I still feel like I'm going to get a more thoughtful experience out of it the second time, where I'm able to see more things clearer, like I did with the Looper this time. But like The Master is such an abstract, very thoughtful piece. It can be very meandering and very longing and very hypnotic, and it's a different experience. But if I wanted something that I just feels like knows exactly what it's doing from beginning to end and hits all those beats really nicely. And honestly, in some of those emotional scenes, like you said, it feels very resonant. And I felt like I cared for these characters a lot, and I cared for what was going to happen towards the end of this movie. I feel like Rian Johnson just really hits it out of the park. I feel like this is his truly great movie that he's made. And I can't wait to see what he does next, because I loved it.
Oh, yeah. I'm insanely interested in what he does next. And I hope this movie does well at the box office.
I pray for this movie to do well.
Because
at the box
this office. Is a sort of movie that everyone should dig, pretty much. This is right up everyone's wheelhouse. It's got some action, it's got some characters, and it's got intelligence. And it's emotional. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much got it all.
I even said this on Twitter, is that if this movie doesn't do well, if this movie does poorly at the box office, I'm moving to China.
Oh, that's the perfect place to go.
And one of the best lines of this movie that I still feel like quoting is, I'm from the future. You should go to China. That whole scene is so good. That's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, it's
Jeff Daniels steals some scenes, yeah.
I've been noticing a lot of China this year, not just in movies, but in television as well. Like, the Louis season 3 finale. I don't want to give anything away, but let's just say that China features very prominently in the Louis season 3 finale. And then there was China in Looper with, Shanghai and whatnot. And also, remember that scene in The Master where Philip Seymour Hoffman sings the Slow Boat to China song? Yeah, and apparently there are a bunch of deleted scenes that involve, like, Joaquin Phoenix wanting to go to China and whatnot.
Yes. Yep.
So I feel like I'm the only one that's noticing this connection.
I didn't notice the connection, but I see what you're talking about now. It's a pretty crazy coincidence.
It's really weird. I'm trying to figure out what it means, but I can't think of anything. It has to mean something.
So I know that you really thought that Looper is great, but I don't know what it was. But I feel like it just hit me on all the right levels.
I feel like you appreciated it much more than I did. And I still implore everyone to watch it, because rarely do we get a movie this daring and original in a mainstream theater.
It is just a good movie. People need to see it. By all accounts, just a good movie.
Yeah, like the only other like good sci-fi movie I could think of is Prometheus, and flawed as that movie was,
A lot of
that
people
movie was
have
still
problems
really.
with that, and I mean, I don't feel like they're gonna have nearly as many problems with like Looper, nor did I. Like, I can notice all like the nitpicky stuff in Prometheus, but I don't know. I just feel like Prometheus is just, it's like a modern classic to me. I really
It
hope,
is.
and I feel
Yeah.
like it will become that.
I
Yeah,
wouldn't
it.
go so far as modern classic, but I do feel like as the years go on, we'll look at that movie more fondly. You know, I genuinely think that Prometheus is going through the same cycle that Blade Runner is going through, which is ironic considering it's Ridley Scott all over again.
I don't want to say that necessarily.
I mean,
I
who
feel that
knows
way
it, it...
towards Looper, but I really did still love Prometheus. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see 10 years from now.
Yeah,
Maybe
well,
kind of. Maybe kind of like how in 2007, when There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men released, and everyone thought No Country for Old Men was the best movie of the year, but there were some people that really truly loved There Will Be Blood, me included, that felt like a few many years from now, people will look upon There Will Be Blood as like the real like. Best movie of that year. It just takes time to fully, how do you say, digest. Fully time to like appreciate it, you could say.
yeah, you have to really digest it. Like, those are the types of movies that you kind of really have to process and think about, especially Prometheus. And I feel
So
like
what
not enough people did with that movie. It's kind of unfair how a lot of people write it off as, oh, it's the most disappointing movie of the year and whatnot.
So I gotta ask, what are you doing right now? I hear you. Must be doing something.
Oh, typing? It's just like typing a few little notes.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So we all recommend Looper. You should all watch it right now.
Go see it immediately.
Run, don't walk. You should do that now.
Oh, wait. Wait, one little thing. I really liked Noah Segan in the movie. He's the guy that played Kid Blue. And if you didn't know, he's been in both of Rian Johnson's past films, and I had to look this up because I know he looked really familiar to me. And the first thing I thought was he must have been in one of Rian Johnson's past films because I'd never seen this guy before. But he keeps using him in Looper like this big punching bag. He played Dode. He played Dode in Brick. He was that kind of smarmy chain smoker looking guy that was in that back alley in Brick that used to date Joseph Gordon-Levitt's.
Oh yeah, now I
Yeah.
remember.
It was that guy, and I'm fairly sure he was in Brothers Bloom. At least
I can't remember what
that's what look
character
at
he
me.
was though.
I don't remember either because I haven't seen that movie in so long, and I only saw it
Yeah,
once.
I
Anyway,
actually
yeah.
saw it like a few months back, but even then my memory's a bit hazy. 'Cause like it's good, it's just like, you know, it's really flawed.
Yeah, I need to see it again sometime because I feel like I might appreciate it more on the second viewing. We'll see it though. So yeah, Looper, great movie. Highly recommend it. Go see it. Have a blast. Have a good time.
Do it, man. Do it.
Need to see the master again. Need to go to China.
Yeah, speaking of which, I did see the
So,
master again. Lots of interesting stuff the second time. And you know what? I think I finally submitted it. I finally submit myself to the master, and I would definitely say that so far, that's my favorite movie of the year.
it's juggling between me. I haven't fully decided. The thing I didn't want to bring up. Did you think about the whole ex-wife thing that I brought up last time? And when you sing it the second time, where Amy Adams brings up the whole like Lancaster Dodd doesn't like to be around his ex-wives, it's one of the things he doesn't like. And there's that whole connection with possibly Laura Dern being his former
Yeah, I
ex-wife and
did kind of notice
Lancaster
that.
Dodd.
My mom noticed that as well, 'cause you know, this was her first time seeing it. And
Yeah.
like then like that kind of brings to mind like sort of like Mormonism, where you know, multiple wives sort of thing.
Oh, I didn't think. Wait.
And so it kind of like brings
Oh,
that religion
nice.
theme full circle.
I can see that. Yeah. I didn't originally connect like the Scientologists into two different things, but it's similar because Mormons have similar views,
Yeah,
similar ideas in a
exactly.
sense. Yeah. Okay.
And one thing I kind of noticed is that most movies about religion, about fictional religions, almost every single religion, fictional or non-fictional, is about like a supernatural being. And the really interesting about the religion of the master, the cause, is that there's no supernatural being at all. Even Scientology has a Xenu or whoever it is, and
You could even say
cause.
that the individual person is the god because
Yeah,
they're able to
exactly.
look back upon their own past lives.
Yeah,
Which is
exactly.
interesting.
So that's
Yeah.
a really interesting take on that that I
Yeah.
started noticing.
God,
Other thing I
I need to see
noticed
it again.
was that homoeroticism I mentioned earlier, that sprung out a lot more the second time around, especially with like some glances that Joaquin Phoenix makes while he's taking Lancaster Dodd's pictures. And then there's also like the way like we were talking about how Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman's relationship is kind of similar to like a dog and a master.
I see that more than the homoeroticism.
Yeah, and one thing I started noticing was when Philip Seymour Hoffman literally says like "good boy" or "naughty boy." So that really drove it home this time around. So yeah, definitely see The Master a second time. You'll notice a lot of really interesting things that you may have not noticed the second
I'm
time around.
dying to. My goal for the end of the year, I need to see the master a second time, and I need to see the sessions a second time. Those are my three heavy hitters for the year so far that I've seen. But we've got a lot of really good movies that I can't wait to see that are coming out. Oh
Yeah.
boy.
Next week is kind of odd.
It's kind of uninteresting. We have Tim
Taken
Burton's new
two.
and or Taken 2, the
Yeah,
sequel to
Taken two.
the Liam Neeson "You Just Stole My Daughter, I Need Her Back" action movie.
Yeah,
And
I'm
then
probably gonna see that because my mom's a big fan of the first one, and every time she sees a trailer for Taken two, she's like, "Oh my God, I'm so excited," and whatnot. And it's been getting a lot of bad reviews
oh
lately,
yeah.
so who knows?
And I probably won't be, but however, one thing I am somewhat interested in is Tim Burton's next animated film, Frankenweenie, which is based on an original short story that he created back when he used to work at Disney and what led him to be fired, I believe.
Yeah, because it was
And
apparently too
it's like,
dark for kids,
yeah,
original story.
it's basically Frankenstein with a dog. A
Yeah,
young boy
did you know
decides to
that the
bring his
original
dog to
short
life.
was actually live action? It wasn't even animated.
I did not know that because I feel like I've seen sketches of the animated version of it, but that must have just been like storyboard.
Yeah, that was like
That's
concept art.
crazy.
Yeah,
I'm interested
so.
to see what that would be in live action.
Yeah, at least that's what I heard. Who knows? But yeah, this one is animated, so like it's a bit easier to digest for children, like the very dark subject matter.
Little more accessible than seeing a patched up, weird looking dog that has tail has like a tail that can just come off.
Yeah, exactly.
A
It's
little
been getting
less
some pretty
graphically
good
scarring.
reviews.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be really
Yeah,
positive
it
toward it.
seems to be like the first good Tim Burton movie since Sweeney Todd, I believe.
Well, a lot of people would disagree with that. I mean, critic-wise,
I
yes.
love Sweeney Todd.
No. I mean that there's been movies after Sweeney Todd that people really like. Like, I don't know why. Everyone I talk to seems to really love Alice in Wonderland, and that's the one I hate.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a shame. But I did really enjoy Sweeney Todd, so I don't know. I kind of wish Tim Burton would do another musical because I feel like him working with I think it was Peter Sondheim, something like that. I
Stephen
forget.
Sondheim.
Stephen Sondheim, thank you. Him and Stephen Sondheim's work I feel just mesh really well together. That
Yeah,
kind of gothic,
definitely.
dark kind of similar aesthetic style. It worked
Yeah.
well.
And guess what actually comes out in limited release?
I don't know.
VHS.
Oh, hey.
Reviewed last week.
I really hope that comes to a theater near me because
So
I'd love
if
to
you
see that
guys
again in a
haven't
theater.
had a chance to see it in VOD, definitely check it out if it's playing in a theater near you.
I highly recommend it.
We already did last week. We recommend it.
Oh, man. It's getting pretty late.
Indubitably.
Yeah.
All right, so
So, that
Loop
is a
is
wrap.
great, and Borderlands 2 does some weird stuff, and Torchlight 2 is apparently really good.
Borderlands 2 is a little disappointing, but a lot of people will still probably find it fun, like I do. Okay.
Yep, so I guess that's it.
Tell
I'm
me, Chris.
Chris.
Tell me,
Oh, right,
Chris,
yeah.
where can I find you?
Oh, you're doing it to me now. I'm
I'm
doing
asking you this
the
time.
switch on things.
Doing a little switch, yes.
All right, you can find me on twitter.com/CGRunyon. That's capital C, capital G, capital RUNYON. And what about you?
You can find me at twitter.com/TBBucks20, capital TBB, lowercase UCS, number 20.
All right, we have a website. It's cineffectpodcast.blogspot.com, and I have a feeling we really are going to go over with that whole WordPress change.
I mean, from what you were telling me, it sounds like it's a better choice, so I'd go with it, sure.
Yeah, it's just that I'm really busy right now with, you know, schoolwork, so it's
God,
probably.
stop being so busy.
No, I also write a bunch of stuff, so.
Oh my God, maybe you could write less, you know?
Oh,
it's such a
it's
burden
the
on the
writer's
family.
itch. I have to do it. I have to do it. I have to do it. And
So
you can also
that
start
change might
talking.
happen sometime. Oh yeah, and iTunes too.
Yep, just search for Set Effect Podcast. It should be there somewhere, hopefully. If it's not, then that would be a problem. I'd hate for that. And are there any other links that I'm forgetting? I have a feeling I'm forgetting something.
Probably the Tumblr.
Oh yeah, I did mention last week, but there's also a Tumblr if you're into the Tumblr thing. And it's more simple than the Blogspot link. It's just cineffect.tumblr.com. There.
Yeah,
Easy to
Tumblr.
find.
Tumblr is not my kind of thing, but hey, I'm all fine with a Cineffect trademarked Tumblr account.
Yeah, exactly. Like more people are reading our shit now.
Hopefully, more
And
people are.
thanks to Tumblr, they get to reblog it, and more people get to share it.
And then other people see that another person has reblogged it, and then
it's the
just
social network chain.
It's
Oh,
just
boy.
This. It's just this cycle of reblogging. It's dare I say it's like a loop.
Oh, bringing it full circle. Am I right?
Exactly.
Am I right?
I remember speaking of funny looper puns. I remember seeing one earlier. If I can find it really quick, give me a second. Give me a second. Give me a second. Holy shit! I'm trying.
Looper.
I don't
I
know.
hardly even know her. Oh, indeed.
Not
that one's
that
too.
One. I was trying a little too hard. I thought I saw Brian Lee O'Malley say something about it, but I don't remember. Oh well. Maybe I'll bring
Oh,
it
yeah,
up next
I
time.
remember. He had a really funny pun, and it was
Delete.
Looper. I Joseph
Dude.
Gordon loved it.
Yeah.
Oh really? Oh, O'Malley, you silly O'Malley.
Be my louver. I want to go see. Oh, never mind. That's
He
just him
really
saying he
loved
wants to
Looper.
see it again. He did. Yep. He
So
did. He did.
that's another endorsement. The
Oh, hey,
Scott
no,
Pilgrim
wait.
versus Looper.
Actually, that reminds me. Next week, Pitch Perfect. Hey, I might get dragged to seeing. It came out in select theaters this week, which happened to be like in every major theater that I live near.
Yeah, Pitch Perfect. It actually got a surprising amount of positive reviews, like saying it's actually surprisingly good.
And the
And
consensus.
you've been saying that that's probably not true because of that whole Ryan Seacrest thing you mentioned.
I know, but the consensus that I'm hearing about it is that it's a very nice, light PG-13 crowd pleaser. And to be honest, that's not really what I want to go out and spend my money on, especially when there's a bunch of other better movies coming out,
Like
or
Looper.
and The Master.
Yeah, exactly.
And some people seem to really love Dread, but I
Yeah, and
haven't seen.
even if you just want to go to Pitch Perfect just to see Anna Kendrick, you know what you should do instead? You should watch End of Watch, because Anna Kendrick is pretty fantastic in
I
it.
forgot she was. Yeah, I forgot she was in it.
Yeah, Anna Kendrick is a legit, really good actress.
Yeah, she is slowly coming into her own.
Yeah, like a lot of people
I
give her
look forward.
flack for being in Twilight, but like aside from that, and Up in the Air
Yeah, I dug her in Up in the Air a lot, yeah.
And a lot of her other stuff, she's actually really good. So,
she's choosing some better projects, some better stuff than Twilight, yeah.
And even in Twilight, she's not bad. So,
well, it's like a super minor thing. She's like barely even in it.
Yeah, but still.
But she's not on screen enough to actually be bad. She's on screen enough to just be. Yeah, I remember she was in that movie.
Yeah, she's that
yeah.
girl who's like there for 5 minutes and says some quirky stuff. Yeah, I like her.
That was her, yeah.
Yeah, we've been going on a lot with the post show.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you get to see the dark. This is raw, uncut Skinflex.
Skin effect.
Yeah, skin effect. That's what I meant. Stupid Freudian brain.
You try to mix together like the channel and a bunch of other things. It just all went wrong.
It just went. It's a wet fart.
So I'm going to say, since we've already shouted out our various links and whatnot, that we can call this a wrap. I'm Alex.
All right, I'm Chris.
And I just said I'm Alex, but I'll say again, and I'm Alex.
Yeah, because he actually cut off that last time for some
Damn
reason.
it. God damn it. I tried my
It
best.
just sounded like Alet.
Well,
Like holla.
I am Ale.
Yeah, and
With
I'm
an X.
Kree.
Kree with an S.
That's the silent.
Yeah, we're done.
See you guys next time.
Goodbye.
Why in the world do I love you like I do, baby? When you told me over and over, sure enough, girl, that you wouldn't be true. Well, I can't stop myself from singing the same old song. I love you with a love so powerful, so powerful. I could tell myself I don't want you anymore. Oh, baby. Then I turn around and say goodbye. Oh, baby. Walk straight on out the door. But you know I'll be back. Oh, knocking at me before you can count to ten. I'm a prisoner, and you got the key, baby. I know I'll never be happy till you love me and set me.